by His divine grace to the Sultan, "You rogue, do you dare beat an innocent cow because Lord Krishna and Arjun, the carrier of the Gandiva bow, are out of sight? Since you are beating the innocent in a secluded place, you are considered a culprit and therefore deserve to be killed." Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In a civilization where God is conspicuously banished and there is no devotee warrior like Arjun, the associates of the age of Kali take advantage of this lawless kingdom and arrange to kill innocent animals like the cows in secluded slaughterhouses. Such murderers of animals stand to be condemned to death by the order of a pious king like Maharaj Parikshit. For a pious king, the culprit who kills an animal in a secluded place is punishable by the death penalty, exactly like a murderer who kills an innocent child in a secluded place. So, Parikshit Maharaj saw Kali was punishing the bull and the cow. The bull was standing on one leg with his three other legs broken, and the cow was shedding tears in pain because this person, Kali, was torturing her. So as soon as Parikshit Maharaj saw that these people are, this person was unnecessarily inflicting pain on the cow and the bull, he became very, very furious, and he immediately released his sword, and he decided to kill this person, Kali. And here he is saying, "You rogue, do you dare beat an innocent cow because Lord Krishna and Arjun, the carrier of the Gandiva bow, are out of sight? Since you are beating the innocent in a secluded place, you are considered a culprit and therefore deserve to be killed." Actually, this Kali did not even kill the cow and the bull. The Kali just beat the cow, was torturing the cow, and that's why Parikshit Maharaj is ready to kill him. So what to talk about the people, those who are killing cows, and not only in one or two, but in thousands upon thousands. So we can see that how degraded this age has become due to the influence of Kali. Actually, Kali's business is to destroy dharma. Dharma means religiosity. And what is real religion? Real religion is Krishna consciousness. Real religion is to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and develop a relationship with Him. And actually all the bona fide religions in essence are saying that. But because they have lost the real understanding of their religion, they have rejected Krishna. Otherwise, all the great religious teachers are talking about Krishna consciousness. We notice that all the religious teachers talk about one God. Jesus spoke about one God. Muhammad spoke about one God. The whole Vedic scriptures are talking about one God. So we can see that real bona fide religion propagates the theory of one God. But unfortunately people, less intelligent people, do not understand that teaching. God is one and His name is Krishna. Not only Krishna, He has innumerable names. But His names are relative to His qualities and pastimes. In Sanskrit, as you all know, Krishna means all attractive. It's the quality of the Lord. Now who else but God can be all attractive? Can anybody be all attractive? Can anyone attract everybody? We have some ability to attract somebody, but no one has the ability to attract everybody. So the one who can do that is God, and that is Krishna. Krishna attracts everyone. Krishna attracts even his incarnation. What to talk about his incarnation? Krishna attracts even himself. Krishna himself is enchanted by seeing his own form. Krishna once saw his reflection on the sphotik, on the crystal, reflected on the crystal of the floor. The floor in his palace was made of crystal. And he saw the reflection, and he wondered who that person is. So beautiful. And so that is Krishna, that is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So God has many other names also. In English, you are familiar with one name as all powerful, almighty. So that's another name. Like the way Krishna is all attractive, another quality of Krishna is all powerful. So that is another name. So when somebody says all powerful, who do you think he's addressing to? When you address, when you hear somebody saying all power, he is all powerful. Who else but God can be all powerful? So whenever somebody says all powerful, you immediately relate to, oh, this is God. The same way when somebody says all attractive, you immediately think it must be God. It is God. Now unfortunately in other religions, God's form and God's pastime have not been described. Christianity doesn't describe about the Lord's form. Although Christianity says that Lord the Father has a form and man has been created according to the image of that form. Man has been created according to the image of God. So obviously it implies that God's form is like the form of a man, of a human being. But it does not give a very specific description, like how does he look, how, what's the complexion of his body, and how does his eyes look, how does his foot look, how does his hands look, etc., etc. Whereas in the Vedas, the whole descriptions are given, how Krishna looks. And because in Bible it has been pointed out that God is the oldest person and the father of everyone, due to the lack of information, they think that God is an old person. And they imagine him with big beard and with a stick ready to punish everyone. but that description is not from Bible. That is the concocted ideas later on development. But if we relate to the Vedas, then we also find out that he is the supreme person, he is the oldest person. He is the oldest person. Ardham Purana Purusham. He is the Adi Purusham, Govindam Adi Purusham, the primeval personality, the primeval Lord. But Navajovanamsha. His form is like a 16-year-old boy. Navajovana means when there is one age called Koishor. From 10 to 15 is Koishor. And when from Koishor one enters into youth, that's a very beautiful age. Especially for boys. It's an innocent youth, you can say. So Krishna's form is like that. Krishna is innocently youthful all the time. Navakishore. The newly budding youth. So that is Krishna. And all these informations are there. So when, according to these informations, we present the Krishna consciousness, then people think that, well, this is something Indian. Because They think that it's coming from India, so Krishna is an Indian god. But actually God is neither Indian nor Russian nor Chinese or North Swiss. God is God. He is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is the Adi Purusham, he is the father of every living entity. Not only he is the father of the human being, but he is the father of the animals, the birds, the insects, the worms, the trees and plants, everyone. So that is the supreme personality of Godhead. Now, in the age of Kali, that understanding is destroyed. Kali's business is to destroy Krishna consciousness. Kali's business is to obscure the identity of Krishna and bewilder people. And he does it in a subtle way. Now, one of the ways to destroy dharma is to torture the cows and torture the Brahmins. You know from Krishna book that Kamsa, when he wanted to stop the influence of the demigods, so he stopped sacrifice and he also started to torture. No, he didn't actually, the Kamsa was not that sinful. He didn't actually torture the cows. Torturing the cows started with the age of Kali. And it's Kali, by torturing the cow, by slaughtering the cows, Kali removes dharma. And more the people become involved in that activity, more dangerous, more precarious becomes the condition of this earth. So that is how Kali is actually destroying dharma. So Parikshit Maharaj, he was an expert exponent of scriptures. He knew the scriptural injunction. The Kshatriyas used to be taught about the Vedic injunction. The Kshatriyas also used to go to the Gurukul in their childhood. The Brahmins and Kshatriyas used to go to the Gurukul in their childhood. And sometimes some Vaishyas also would be sent. But generally Brahmins and Kshatriyas used to be educated by a bona fide spiritual master. And the bona fide spiritual master would give them the understanding of the scriptures. And according to that scriptural understanding, a Kshatriya king would rule the kingdom. So Parikshit Maharaj, he was aware of this influence or the effect of torturing the cow. He immediately realized that this torturing the cow is going to cause a great damage to the society. At the same time, Kali also knew that if he wanted to destroy dharma, then he will have to do it this way, by torturing the cows and killing cows. But Parikshit Maharaj immediately tried to stop him. Not only stop him, he wanted to destroy him, he wanted to kill him. But then, what did Kali do? Kali begged him, please forgive me. Please don't kill me, don't kill me. Then Parikshit Maharaj, actually it's also another scriptural injunction that when the enemy begs for his life, one must give him his life back, should not kill him. So Parikshit Maharaj said, okay, since you are begging for your life, I'll give it to you. I won't kill you. But you can't stay in my kingdom. You get out of my kingdom. Then Kali saw that the whole earth planet actually is ruled by Parikshit Maharaj, even including the ocean. So he asked him that, if you banish me from your kingdom, where shall I go? Because the entire earth planet is your kingdom. Please give me some place at least to stay. Parikshit Maharaj said, okay, you can stay where killing of innocent animal or meat eating goes on, where people gamble, where people take intoxication, and where people indulge in illicit sex life. Then Kali saw that nowhere in Parikshit Maharaj's kingdom a single person is indulging in any of these four activities. No one eats meat, no one indulges in intoxication or gambling or illicit sex. So he begged again, please give me some place. I don't see anyone indulging in these activities. These activities are completely absent in your kingdom. So I cannot really stay anywhere. So then Parikshit Maharaj said, fine, you can stay wherever there is gold. Gold means unnecessary accumulation of wealth. So then Kali found some place. And Kali is so vicious that although he had been forgiven by Parikshit Maharaj, but he did not forgive Parikshit Maharaj. He was waiting to destroy Parikshit Maharaj because he knew as long as Parikshit Maharaj was there, there is no possibility for him to spread his influence. Because Parikshit Maharaj was such a powerful king that he would not allow Kali to spread his influence. So he was waiting, and he knew, Kali knew, that he can't destroy Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj is so powerful that it's impossible for him to destroy him. So he thought of a dubious means, and that is, he realized that Parikshit Maharaj is powerful, but more powerful than Parikshit Maharaj is Rama. So if he wants to destroy Parikshit Maharaj, so he must take advantage of the Brahmin and use their potency to kill Parikshit Maharaj. And he did that. He entered into the body of this Brahmin boy, Shringi. He influenced Shringi to curse Parikshit Maharaj. And it's because of the Brahmin's curse that Parikshit Maharaj had to leave this planet. Otherwise, there was no one who could actually do anything to Parikshit Maharaj. And after Parikshit Maharaj left, then his son, Janmejaya, was also a powerful king. But he was not powerful enough to stop the influence of Kali. Then gradually Kali started to creep in. And now Kali has put his agents everywhere. Wherever you see a leader karmic world, you can understand that this is the influence of Kali. This is the agent of Kali. Wherever you see, sometimes there may be some good men, but most of the time it is all bad people. And if there is some good man, Kali tries to destroy him, kill him. I have a feeling that it is Kali who actually crucified Jesus. Kali conspired to crucify Jesus. He entered into the Jews, and the Jews conspired and forced the Romans crucify Jesus. There are so many people, those who have been killed, those who have been trying to establish Dharma, but they have been killed, and that is conspiracy of Kali. But Kali may be treacherous, and Kali may be very, very influential, but Kali doesn't stand a chance in front of this Krishna consciousness. This is a special movement that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought in to destroy the influence. It's very, very powerful. And that's why Kali is trying to stop the movement. But Kali will not be able to stop the movement. How is Kali trying to stop the movement? Kali tries to stop this Krishna consciousness movement by bringing in dissension, internal conflict, internal fight. So Kali is doing it. From time to time, Kali makes the devotees fight among themselves. And because of that fight, they become weak. And then Kali destroys everything. That's what happened recently in Gaudiya Math. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was preaching, he preached all over India. And practically, Krishna consciousness spread all over India. And he made plans to conquer the West. And he sent his disciples to the West. Unfortunately, they were not successful. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur planted the seed of Krishna consciousness movement to spread in the West. But after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left, many of his leading disciples started to fight among themselves. So Kali entered that way. First they entered, Kali influenced them to disobey the order of their spiritual master. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told them to manage the society through a GVC body. But they didn't agree. After Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left, some of them thought, how can a spiritual organization be run by a managerial body? Material society can be managed by a managerial body, a governing body. But a spiritual society cannot possibly run like that. So for a spiritual society, we need a spiritual person as the head. So against Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's will, they appointed an acharya. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not want to appoint any acharya. But they appointed one acharya. And that acharya, the person they appointed, was very brilliant. He was a very learned scholar. He was very strict in his sadhana. He was a very strict brahmachari. He was the best, undoubtedly. He was the best of the whole lot. And actually during Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, they had brilliant preachers in that movement, in Gaudiya Math. Many, many very stalwart preachers. And of all the sannyasis and preachers, he was the best. So they appointed him as the acharya of the society. But soon, he fell down. Now the whole structure of Gaudiya Math was resting on that one person. And when that person fell down, the whole structure collapsed. So then, it didn't take long for Kali to destroy the structure. Actually, when we put one person on top, then he becomes a very big target for Kali. And Kali can very easily get him. And first he enters in the form of pride. Kali enters in the form of pride. And then from pride he becomes vulnerable. And from then the subtle sex desires enter into his heart. And then from subtle sex desire he indulges into the gross sex desire. So, that is how Kali had always been trying to destroy Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement. And Srila Prabhupada warned us time and time again. And his most important instruction was that you cooperate with each other. Cooperation means unity. And when we are united, Kali cannot do anything. Sankirtan movement means united endeavor for spiritual advancement. So Kali tries to break us apart, cause dissension. And when there is dissension, then Kali laughs loudly and says, now I got them. But if we are united, then Kali cannot do anything. And that's why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on unity. You like it or don't like it, they become united. If you love me, then show your love for me through your unity with each other, through your cooperation with each other. It's a very important instruction and we must remember it all the time. Unfortunately, Kali attacked ISKCON also. And gradually ISKCON came to a point when ISKCON could have broken into pieces. Because the leaders started to fight with each other. Instead of becoming united, they become disunited. They're fighting with each other. Instead of one ISKCON, the ISKCON was divided into different zones of different gurus and GBCs. And unfortunately, Kali entered. But because there was unity in general structure of the society, that's why still ISKCON is going on, and ISKCON actually has overcome the greatest crisis. Actually, some very, very big devotees have become agents in the hands of Kali. And some of them are still trying to destroy this movement. When Prabhupada said that their unity is the most important principle, these one or two persons would not unite with others and cooperate with others. So they had to be pushed aside. They had to be ostracized from the society. It's unfortunate, but still, what can be done? You have to save the society. Sometimes when you get gangrene or bad septic in some part of your body, in order to save the whole body, you have to cut that off. Now, it is painful, but in order to save, you have to do that. So we must always remember that the most important thing is we must, we like it or not like it, we must work together. And when we work together unitedly, then everything becomes so easy. Because devotees are so nice people. They are free from vanity, they are free from false ego, they are free from personal interest. So they are all very, very free from any vices. What to talk about gross vices, they are free from even subtle vices. So they can, it's so easy to cooperate with the devotees because they all are trying to serve Krishna. If we have one master, then why can't we work together? If our goal is to please the master, Krishna, and if others are also trying to please the master, then why should we not work together in perfect harmony and cooperation? And that's why Prabhupada put so much emphasis that do not ever think of leaving ISKCON. Never leave ISKCON. That's what Prabhupada said. No matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. Prabhupada said, if you love me, then show your love by your cooperation with each other. Your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate with each other. And the GBC is the ultimate managing authority. So Prabhupada gave these three instructions, most important instructions. And I have seen that if we follow these three instructions, we can never go wrong. Difficulties may come, sometimes you may be put into great unpleasant situations, but still you should not leave this country. No matter how difficult it is, there is no reason why anyone should leave ISKCON. Often people try to justify their leaving ISKCON. Everything is so bad and so on and so forth. But I somehow cannot accept that. I cannot justify that. Yes, if the situation is bad now, then wait. The situation will improve tomorrow. But if you leave, then when the situation improves, you do not get the benefit. Like the people they had, those who complained in the past, why they couldn't stay in ISKCON. Their complaints have been taken care of and ISKCON is practically free from those defects today. But where they are out there in the lap of Maya. They are not getting the benefit of this rectification or reformation. So that's why it is very important that no matter whether we like it or not, we must stay in ISKCON. And sometimes actually it is due to our false ego and that we become influenced by Kali and leave ISKCON. Because sometimes somebody says something harsh or insulting to us and we leave. Now one person may have been insulting to us, but there are 20 other people, those who are so friendly to us. We do not think about these 20 other people. We think that just one man who insulted me and we leave this society. But if we remember that one man has been harsh or unpleasant to me, but there are so many other devotees, those who are so nice and friendly. So why should I leave? And cooperation is the next important thing, that we must cooperate, like it or not. Because sometimes it may be a little difficult to cooperate because of the conflict of ego. But we can see that the conflict of ego is just a temporary thing. After all, every single person who joined ISKCON came with a good intention. They came to become a devotee of Krishna. So at heart, everyone is a devotee. Now, there may be some conflict, and when there is a conflict, you have to understand that this is due to our past karma. Due to our past karma. Because we still have some karma left, this karma is actually making us clash with each other. But if we just tolerate it, then we can act in harmonious relationships. Like once I had a very nice realization about how karma actually acts. One day I was sitting in Vrindavan under a tree, not under a tree, next to a well. That well was cemented, so I was just sitting on the cement. And then all of a sudden one big black ant started to crawl over my feet. So naturally I just flicked the ant to get rid of it. With my finger I just flicked it. And the ant went flying and it hit another ant. And these two ants started to fight with each other. So I was thinking that this is how we clash with each other due to karma. Like we do not intend to fight with each other, but because of our karma, some superior energy flicks us. And we bump into each other and then we start to fight. Well, why did you hit me? And he says, why did you say this thing to me? And then immediately starts a fist fight. So we have to be careful and always try to avoid conflict. And actually it's so easy to avoid conflict. The best way to avoid conflict is by becoming Srinadopi Sunichena Sarvajiva Vishnu. If you become humble as a blade of grass, then no one can ever take any offense. There is one, actually the art of unarmed combat, or what's it called, that judo and jiu-jitsu and all this martial arts, this oriental martial art, the whole technique is actually based on avoiding the conflict. Like if somebody tries to hit you, don't hit him back. With the force that he is hitting you, you simply pull him with that force. So that is the best way to defeat your enemy. Somebody comes to hit you and you absorb the shock. And that also was the theory of Gandhi actually. Gandhi said that it takes more strength to tolerate. So by tolerating, you become stronger than your enemy. So tolerate all the onslaughts of your enemy and you'll be able to defeat him. Actually, it's a wonderful theory. So if somebody comes to hit you, somebody comes to insult you, you just fold your hand and say, "I'm sorry, Prabhu. I won't do it again. I'm sorry that I made a mistake. Now, please accept my humble obeisances. And Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami. Just by remembering Prabhupada, we can forget all our differences. And when you do that, other Vaishnava is bound to become humble also. Maybe some neophytes will not be humble and might take advantage and insult you further. It doesn't really matter. We have come here to become humble. We haven't come here to become arrogant. We have come to Krishna consciousness to become humble. So let us become humble. And if we become humble, then there won't be any problem. That's why Mahaprabhu's most important instruction is Srinadopi Sunichena Saruri Vashadishena Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. This is the process for this age of Kali. And in order to become humble and tolerant, what we have to do? The next verse extends that. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitang, na jagadisha kamam. Because if we want dhanam, janam and sundarim, then you are bound to clash. All the clashes begin with that. Desire for money, desire for name and fame, and desire for women. In the gross platform we see big fights take place because of women. Troy was destroyed just because of one woman. You know that story of Iliad? Helen, just one girl, and destroyed one kingdom. Just for one girl. So stupid. There are so many fights. I mean, read all the novels, all the romantic novels, and it is always there is conflict. And what is the cause of conflict? A woman. Now that's the gross platform. In a very gross platform, the gross people, they fight for women. Then little more gross, little more subtle people, they fight for money. And the most subtle of all these three fight for name and fame. Actually, the name and fame is the most subtle, and that's the first thing that attacks a devotee. The desire for name and fame. The conflict due to the desire for name and fame. Because devotees are free from these two, the gross platforms. They don't run after women, and they don't run for money, run after money so much. But Kali tries to influence one by a very subtle sex desire, that of name and fame, distinction, adoration, and profit. And we think that actually I am doing it for Krishna. I want to become famous because of Krishna. We try to justify our desire for name and fame in the guise of Krishna consciousness. After all, I'm doing it for Krishna. If I become famous, then people will listen to me. So let me try to become famous. And this man is coming on my way. He wants to become famous. So stop him. So that is the very, very subtle psychological drawback. So that's why it is better that when fame comes, we must try to avoid that. The example is Madhavendra Puri. All the Vaishnavas are such wonderful examples. Like one example I could immediately thought of is Madhavendra Puri. Gopinath stole kheer for Madhavendra Puri and sent it to him. So Madhavendra Puri was far away in the middle of nowhere, in a place where there was nobody around. So the pujari came and offered him that pot of And Madhavendra accepted the kiss, and when he heard the story, what actually happened, then Madhavendra Puri could sense that now the word will spread and people will come running to see me and fame will attack me. So that night only Madhavendra Puri left the place and went there, because he was afraid that the fame would get him. But although Madhavendra Puri ran away from fame, fame ran after Madhavendra Puri. Right? And that is called Vaishnavi Pratishtha, the fame of a Vaishnava. And that's why Madhavendra Puri is famous even today. So you avoid becoming famous. You try to disregard these possibilities of fame. Avoid fame. But fame, Krishna will offer you all the fame. So many devotees, go to think of it, the Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were literally sitting in the forest. And not only sitting in the forest, they didn't have any place to stay. Different days they were living under different trees. They were avoiding all kinds of contacts with mundane people. Although they were the greatest scholars, they were the greatest of all, greatest of people, but still they were leading a very, very secluded life. But still we can see that although they didn't want to become famous, they have become so famous so that we remember them still today with the greatest awe and reverence. So that's why a devotee doesn't want to become famous. Now let us consider, if we want to become famous, then what happens? If we think that, well, now I want to be, actually I need to become famous. And we may justify by saying that, well, because when I become famous, then many, many people will listen to me and I'll spread Krishna consciousness very nicely. If we desire the fame ourselves, then what will happen? When you see that somebody else is also becoming famous, maybe he is becoming famous because Krishna wants him to become famous. But we think that why is he becoming more famous than I am? After all, I am a big leader. If he becomes famous, then he won't be so effective, because he can't speak so well, he doesn't look so good, and so forth. People won't accept him. But if I become famous, then people will listen to me, and Krishna consciousness will spread. So then I try to stop him from becoming famous, and then we begin to clash. He may not want to clash, but I become envious. And then, because of that envy, I fall down. Or if we want to become famous, then dhanam, from fame comes the desire for dhanam. The desire for wealth, desire for accumulation of money. And then, when you become even more gross, then one runs after sundari. So there is no way out. You allow Maya to enter. Maya enters like a needle and goes out like a plow. That's what Maya does. Or Prabhupada gives an example of the camel. It was very cold, and the camel told the people inside, please let me just put my foot inside the tent. There was a tent and the camel was feeling very cold. So camel asked, please let me allow them just to put my foot inside, one foot. It don't take very much space. And then the camel says that, well, please let me, I'm freezing, let me go in a little more. And then he goes allows the foot to go in a little more. And then the first foot goes in fully, then the second one goes in, and then the camel's head goes in, and soon enough the camel takes over the tent and you are out of it. So that's how Maya enters. Maya enters into our heart, and gradually she enters, and then ultimately she drives Krishna away out of our heart, or completely covers Krishna. So we should not allow Maya, we shouldn't give Maya a chance. no matter how subtle it is, we should always try to become Krishna conscious by remembering Krishna and by being favorably disposed to the devotees. If we are favorably disposed to the devotees, then Maya cannot enter. If all the devotees are our friends, then their friendship will protect us. So it's better not to create any enmity with devotees. And actually often we fall down from Krishna consciousness because of our offenses to the other Vaishnavas. Krishna consciousness actually is so strong that Maya cannot actually influence us. But by offending other Vaishnavas, we become weak. And then Maya gets in. Maya influences us. So we should be very, very careful not to offend other Vaishnavas. Always become friendly with the other Vaishnavas. Always try to remain in a very humble mood. Always try to serve the other Vaishnavas, and then everything will be alright. And Krishna consciousness will spread all over the world in leaps and bounds. It's a very, very important society. ISKCON movement is the most important thing that is happening today in the world. Due to familiarity, we may not understand it, or due to our ignorance, we may not understand it. But actually, it is the most important thing that is going on. And if we sincerely just perform whatever we are supposed to do, whatever our duty is, then Krishna consciousness will spread tremendously. That all, we do not have to become big, big leaders. Our respective duties. And then Mahaprabhu will take care of everything. It's like in an army. In an army, the soldiers, they do not really care, you know, about big, big affairs, you know, like where the enemy is, what is the government's policy, whether there will be enough supply for next 3 months, and so on and so forth, how many casualties there have been in last 1 week, and what kind of weapons the enemy have. The regular soldier is not aware of any of these things. But he knows only one thing, that he has been assigned with some responsibility and he must do it. And he does it. A good soldier is a soldier who does his duty. So in Krishna consciousness also, it's an army and we're fighting against Maya. And all we have to do is just do our duty according to the higher authority. Assigned by the higher authority. And if we do that, if all of us are just doing our duty perfectly, with all our sincerity, with all our dedication, then our society will become very, very strong. And it will destroy Kali's influence. So, when the whole army wins the battle, then every single soldier becomes glorified. The same way, if Krishna consciousness spreads all over the world, then every single one of us will become glorified. Because we all have played a part, no matter how insignificant. And actually in Krishna consciousness, nothing is insignificant. Everything is great. Everything is wonderful. And ultimately, Krishna will recognize us, and that recognition actually counts. If we do our duty properly in this Krishna consciousness movement, we may not become world famous. People from all over the world may not know us, but Krishna will recognize us, and that is what counts. If Krishna recognizes us, then he will take us back. So in Krishna consciousness, all we have to do is just become fixed up, render our respective devotional service under the proper direction of the authorities, and then everything will be fine. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Does anybody have any question? Yeah, Guru Shakti.
I want to ask you, how you see the position of the Jews in the future when Krishna consciousness is established all over the world and we have kings in the different countries like that? Will be the position of the Jews?
Then most probably, I can't say with full conviction, but that's why I say most probably. Most probably the GBC will be the Brahminical Council, who will advise the king. Right? It's a spiritual organization, and the spiritual organization is headed by the Brahmin. Right? And they will give the proper direction to the Kshatriya king.
Now the GBC is also taking the role of managing.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that Brahmins also manage, right? But the Brahmins manage through the Kshatriya, not directly, right? So, and Prabhupada actually wanted it that way. Prabhupada wanted that. Of course, I don't mean that the temple presidents are Kshatriyas, but Prabhupada wanted that the GBC should direct the temple presidents, and the temple president should be in charge of the temple. The management should be done by the president with a few senior devotees, like the secretary and treasurer. Or maybe now we have the concept of council, right? So, and Prabhupada actually wanted it that way. Prabhupada wanted that, of course I don't mean that the temple presidents are Kshatriyas, but Prabhupada wanted that the GBC should direct the temple presidents, and the temple president should be in charge of the temple. The management should be done by the president with a few senior devotees, like the secretary and treasurer. Or maybe now we have the concept of council, right? And the Prabhupada didn't actually want the GBC to become involved into day-to-day management. GBC is an advisory committee and a supervisory committee. GBC should come as Prabhupada's representative, see the standard is maintained, right? That the devotees are chanting 16 rounds, right? They're attending the morning programs, they're following the four regulative principles, right? So this is what the GBC will become, the spiritual side of it, not how much money should be spent and how much money should be made. That is the temple president.
So another question I had, you spoke about maintaining glory and how Rosh Hashanah would say this money would not look after these things and it would not be longer. So, and then you brought the examples of Brahmanas like Madhavendra Puri, great devotees, and the Goswami. Like, how is it, if you're looking back like Mahabharata time, you see that devotees like Bhima and Arjuna were very eager to get fame and be not tolerant.
Is it?
And how is it that the devices do not have the desire for wealth? So I cannot understand, I cannot bring this point, different points together.
Yeah. At the heart of it,
also applied in our movement, because we have different natures. That we want to serve Krishna with our nature, and we want to establish again Vanasam Dharma. How is it exactly?
Yeah, actually people with Kshatriya propensities will desire name, fame, or dhanam, janam and sundarim. That is a Kshatriya tendency. But that's why Kshatriyas should act under the guidance of the Brahmin. Kshatriyas, if the Kshatriya becomes independent, there will be chaos. Right? So Kshatriya should be directed by the Brahmins, or in our society, the higher authorities, right? And then also Kshatriya should try to avoid conflict. Right? People with Kshatriya tendency, they have a tendency to fight, but in this age of Kali, Kali is also trying to fan the fire. Right? So better to avoid that possibility of fighting. So if there is any clash, more than a Vaishnava, more than a Kshatriya, you are a Vaishnava. Devotees are not, I mean, they may have Kshatriya propensity, but their first and foremost identity is that they are Vaishnavas. Right? So they must act as Vaishnavas. Varnashram is secondary to Vaishnava principle. Vaishnavism, Krishna consciousness, is the most important principle. And Varnashram is the secondary principle. So with that understanding, now we must go ahead. And avoid conflict as much as we can. Especially, if there is any conflict, try to sort it out. Approach the higher authority, approach the Brahmana. I mean, those who are Kshatriyas, they must approach the Brahmanas and present it to them that, look, there is some conflict, there is some difficulty. So what you should do? And then the Brahmin comes and sorts it out.
So this depends on the purification of our intelligence that we can see how to control the Brahmanas.
Yeah. More Krishna conscious you become, your intelligence becomes more and more developed. Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam.
Just a question, your first question, you know, how he was just a baby now, and in 10,000 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, golden period of 10,000 years that we have, Janaka Pandit predicts that 15,000 years there's no Yamuna, there's no Gandhi, there's 20,000 years there's no deities and temples anymore. So what did he mean when he said in the future when DBC and the Kashi came?
Yeah, but there is a prediction that in the middle of the age of Kali, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu,
the middle,
middle means in during the age of Kali, middle in the sense during the age of Kali, after Mahaprabhu's appearance, the golden age of this country.
Oh, so he needs an accurate.
Yeah.
We sometimes meet very humble, devoted people, but isn't there a danger that they are exploited by others which are not so humble?
Yeah, so we have to be careful that we become submissive to the devotee, not the crook. We do not become humble to the crook, right? We are not, you know, stupid. Right. Or we should not become stupid. We should not allow anybody come and run all over us. Right? We should sell our head to the right person. And then follow him. And then you can never go wrong. We are not stupidly humble. Yes.
Diventa il puro e effettivo servizio reso al Santo Nome.
Every activity that is performed in ISKCON becomes a pure and effective service to the Holy Name.
That's why we have to follow the authorities, the higher authorities. We do not decide our service ourselves. We follow the instructions of the higher authorities and act according to their assignment. Right? And this whole society is designed to glorify the Holy Name and spread the Holy Name. So when we render some positive service to the society, it actually is transferred or transmitted towards glorifying Hare Krishna.
In questo servizio di devozione sei pienamente cosciente di me. Ecco, io vorrei chiedere questo maggio. Questo cosciente di me, dice Krishna, può essere anche visto nel senso che uno, appunto, sia che svolga un'attività di diversi varna, cioè apprende e studia da questi libri come agire in rispettivi varna come Krishna. Non so se.
Yes, that in Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada, there is a very proficient sense that one should be, in every activity one should depend on him and be always conscious of him. Being conscious of Krishna means that one studies the scriptures so to learn how one should act in his own particular varna.
Actually, the way of becoming conscious of Krishna all the time is by developing our love for Krishna. Then, whatever we do is for our love for Krishna. Right? I mean, whatever we do for our love for Krishna makes us Krishna conscious. Like, to give an example, the mother loves the child. Now the mother doesn't sit with the child all the time or, you know, say, you know, like how much she loves the child, right? But she, whatever she does for the child. She's cooking, she's thinking of the child, right? She's boiling the milk, she's thinking of the child, right? She's cleaning the house, she's thinking of the child, right? It is because of her love for the child, whatever she's doing for the child, right? She's washing the child's clothes, she's cooking for the child, she's cleaning the dirt that the child created. And the same way, when we love Krishna, we do everything for Krishna. Right? And that's how we become Krishna conscious. Not that we sit at one place and meditate on Krishna all the time. That's not our process. That's the process of the yogis. But if you get that process, we become active and remember Krishna by our service to Him. And that service is our expression for our love, our expression of our love for Him. Right? Now, varnashram comes in according to our propensity. Right? What we will do for Krishna will be defined by the kind of propensity we have. Like, for instance, if somebody has a propensity to speak, right? Somebody likes to speak. So let them go out and speak about Krishna. But somebody doesn't like to speak. Now, if you tell him that you have to go and speak, right? So he will feel completely out of place, right? So maybe he doesn't like to speak, but he likes to cook, right? So fine, let him cook for Krishna. Somebody may like to, work in the field, right? He doesn't like to cook, nor does he like to eat, like to speak, right? So let him work in the field for Krishna. So this is how, according to the individual's propensity, one must be engaged in Krishna service. Right? And if somebody doesn't want to do anything, then let him just that everybody likes. Because that is the first symptom of life, annamaya.
In case of Mother's child, she carries the form of the black man.
Shudra. A Shudra. Shudra king. Shudra dressed as a king.
And then it appears.
That's the form of Kali. That's the form, the Kali's form is like that, that has been described as Koralo Vadana Kurha Kalishya Kalaha Priya. That his face is very Koralo, very dangerous looking, very frightening, and very he is very mischievous, he is very cruel, very wicked. And Kalahapriya, he is very fond of fighting, quarreling. So that has been described as the form of the Kali. It's in the subtle plane. It's like, yeah, so that is how Kali appeared. And that's how Parikshit Maharaj saw Kali. He is a Sudra. Sudra means a person who doesn't have any knowledge. So in the age of Kali, what will happen? The people without knowledge, they'll become the leaders, the kings. And go to see all these politicians, they don't have any knowledge. They know only one thing, how to manipulate. They're big manipulators, right? And that's how they become the leaders. They have all kinds of system of manipulation. They have the gangsters under them, right? If they don't like somebody, somebody is creating problem, they wipe them out, right? And then they have, you know, publicity men, and those who go out and make tremendous propaganda. And they are great showmen. Like, as you can see, Ronald Reagan is a movie star. He was a film actor. He's an actor. A big showman. And you know, he has, by the influence of Kali, he has become the leader of the greatest nation in this world today. One devotee actually wrote a song once. He wrote, "From the peanut farmer to a movie star." and the next one will be the owner of a topless bar. So that's what is happening to this world. The most unqualified people are becoming the leaders. And the real qualified people, they are rejected as Hare Krishna. The most qualified people are actually the devotees of Mahaprabhu's movement. Mahaprabhu is the Yugavatar, and he came to establish Yuga Dharma, and the Yuga Dharma is Harinam Sankirtan. So the people, those who are following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and practicing the Yuga Dharma, Harinam Sankirtan, they are the most qualified people in this. But they have been rejected as social outcasts.
Everybody serves Krishna according to his propensity. Isn't there a danger that a lot of work isn't done at all?
No. Actually, you'll find that by Krishna's arrangement, in the society, there are people, those who like to do different things. And that's how Krishna says, that's why Krishna says, Chatur Varnam Maya Shishta Guna Karma Vibhagata. I have created the four varnas according to the gunas and karmas of different individuals. Now, you will find, actually, in the society, there are four classes are needed. Right? These four classes are, there's one class that are thinkers, philosophers, or spiritual leaders. Actually, they are spiritual leaders. They are the Brahmins. Then, the second class is the executives, the managers, right, the Kshatriyas. The third class is the traders, or business people. And the fourth class are the Sudras, those who like to work under others. They can't work themselves. So, in a society, the number of Brahmins is the least. The number of Kshatriyas are 10 times more than the Brahmins. Number of Vaishyas are 10 times more than the Kshatriyas. And number of Sudras are 10 times more than the Vaishyas. Right? So the number of Sudras are the highest. To every 1,000 Sudras, there is one Brahmin. 10 Kshatriyas, 100 Vaishyas. Right? So in the society, there will be more people, those who would like to work under the direction of others. So whatever you want to do, want to get done, you get that done by these people. They'll always be there. Like if it is a matter of, plowing the land. So here's the people, who is ready to work under your direction. You simply have to tell him what you want him to do. So society is very, society can be very wonderfully structured if we follow the Varnashram.
Well, I just think that in practical work, it sometimes happens that the sugar wants to be accepted.
And yes.
A lot of people who are not qualified want to do a job which they are really not qualified for.
That's right. Because there is no structure. You see, the structure is not there. That's why unqualified people are aspiring, right? Now, you see, that person doesn't really feel good. If you put a sudra on the throne of a king, he'll feel uneasy. He'll think that, I was so much better off carrying the weight in my back and so on and so forth. He doesn't like to sit down in a big place and, wearing nice dresses and so on and so forth. And when the time comes to fight, and he'll be the first one to run, right? he is very uneasy in his position, right? But if you put him in his position as a sudra, he'll be perfectly situated. The same thing with the Vaishya. He likes to do business, and he likes to make money by buying and selling, right? So if you don't let him do that, he won't be satisfied. So instead of, doing business, if you ask him to become a philosopher, he will wonder, what the hell is going on with me? Right? So that's why it is very important that the leaders figure out who is, who should be assigned with what kind of responsibility.
So is it like the individual spiritual master should
he be the one to decide whether his disciple is a devotee? Is Shastri or Brahman or Sudra? Because, you can look at your parents and see what your parents, what kind of things your parents did, and maybe the thing is that, as I just mentioned, our most important principle in our society is unity, and the unity comes out of cooperation is working together. If the guru thinks that my disciples are only my business and I don't give a damn about others, then where is the cooperation? So the guru also should consult with the temple authorities or the local leaders. And first of all, in ISKCON, most of the gurus are just traveling around. They don't have so much contact with their disciples. So they do not know the propensities of their disciples so much. So it is better the guru ask the temple president. Because the temple president is always working with the person, so the temple president tells that actually these are his propensities. And then, the temple president and the guru or the local leaders and the guru, figure out. And the temple president would also think that it is actually better to influence that person if it comes from his guru. Right? He sees that this person has his faith in this guru, in his guru. So let it come from his guru, then he will be fully. So this is how we have to cooperate with each other.
But sometimes it is complicated because
there
are so many devotees.
Devotees have to be served and to the virtue. What they don't feel so good about what?
Yeah, good is because it's not his capacity.
Oh, yeah. So that is a case of a submission. How submissive we have become. If somebody comes and tells me that, can you please do this? And if I say, why should I do it? Let somebody else do it. But if there is no somebody, then what happens? The work doesn't get done. So actually, this should come. This spirit should be displayed by the devotees on top, not the devotees at the bottom. To give an example, Kalkara temple is a very old temple. Kalkara temple was set up in 72 just as an extension to Mayapur, a gateway to Mayapur, right? And everyone was so involved in developing Mayapur that Kalkara temple didn't develop all the Calcutta temples brought in millions and millions of dollars. But the temple is still that same old apartment house. Right? And there are, in a small little house, apartment, there are about 50 devotees. So naturally the place gets dirty. Right? And I have a kind of a phobia for cleanliness. I can't stand dirt. Right? So, since I became the GBC of Calcutta, one of the first things I thought that now I have to clean up this place. So I told the temple president, look, I will try to make it clean. So when I went back after that to Calcutta from Europe, I noticed that Calcutta became even more dirty. Temple became even more. Maybe because in the West everything is so clean, so stands out. The dirt, the dirty atmosphere, dirtiness of the temple becomes very, very obvious. So, I didn't even tell the temple president. He was not there at that time. I just called the devotees and I made them understand that how important it is to be clean, how important cleanliness is in Krishna consciousness. Now, cleanliness is next to godliness. Right? And I saw everyone got fired up. And then, I joined them. Right? And when I joined them, I mean, it was like to them, it was like a big festival. Festival for cleaning. So, we have to do that. Like, we have to inspire devotees by getting involved. Not that the big leaders mean who sits in a big seat and doesn't do anything. That's the materialistic concept. In the material nature, the bigger you are, less you do. But in the spiritual platform, the bigger you are, the more you are supposed to do. So the more advanced devotees will be ready to do the most menial service. And I think it will be nice if the leaders sometimes even go and clean the toilet. And it actually, devotees get inspired by that, you know. They naturally have a service attitude. And when they see that the leader is doing it, they become very, very inspired. Leader means to lead. And in Krishna consciousness, you lead by example. Ashar and prachar. Ashar means practice. You must practice what you preach. Yes.
Or a potere se le pratiche tipo la danza o le presentazioni teatrali sono un'attività diciamo tessuta.
Yes. Those these artistic things are actually the sutras used to get involved in that, but that doesn't mean that they are anything less. Because if they do if someone does something for Krishna, then it's absolute. Then he is no more a sudra or a brahmin, he is a Vaishnava. In Krishna consciousness, we all are Vaishnavas. But we may have different propensities. And the propensities may have been classified. May have been classified in different categories. But we have to understand that they are all absolute. I think I stop now. So, tomorrow we can continue. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much.